Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourselves up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march or demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marches never changed anything.
Okay. Hopefully you guys can hear me. I'm refreshing my board. I'm on a laptop. All right, today's show, while I'm waiting for my screen to repopulate, today's podcast is titled The 10x10 Rule. The 10x10 Rule. There is a book titled The 10x10 Rule. I skimmed a little bit of it yesterday. Matter of fact, and of course, we got a Steve Harvey audio on that. So anyway, I'm waiting for my board to refresh. Okay. Let's play that and then get back to it.
Listen to me. Rich people think differently. So what I'm going to put in your head today is a rich people concept so you can get to understand it. The only difference between successful people and not is just how they think. Rich people think different. Quit letting people tell you you got to get qualified in another program. You don't need another program to be successful. You need to change the way you think. So here's the deal. The problem with becoming a millionaire is that when you decide that you want to be a millionaire, you immediately start thinking, how can I become a millionaire? Well, that thought don't just pop into your head, so you get frustrated and you don't become a millionaire. And you start creating stuff like, well, I guess this wasn't the Lord's will, or as soon as I think of how I'm going to make a million. You can't think of how to make $1 million. Stop. Do you know if you knew how to make $1 million, what's the day, Tuesday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? Would not you make it by Friday? But suppose I told you how you can become a millionaire with what you have. Because here's the deal. All of you have everything it takes to become rich. You just don't believe it. Now, if you can develop this theory that I'm about to share with you, I have the way for you to be rich. This is it. First of all of you have a gift. God gave it to you when he created you. God never created a single soul without giving them a gift. That's the God that created you. He's a very smart God. Here's the cold thing. When he made you, he put the gift inside of you. He didn't hide it under the ocean. It ain't on the mountain nowhere. It ain't under no rocks. You ain't got to go drilling. God put what you needed inside of you at birth. All of you have a gift. But you have got to do your gift, the thing God gave you at birth to do. It is the thing that you do the absolute best with the least amount of effort. That's your gift. Anything else you're doing, you're wasting your time. Do you hear me? You're wasting your time. If when the alarm clock goes off in the morning and it makes you sick every morning that alarm go off, it's because you ain't doing your gift. You're going against what God created you to be. Do most of you know what your gift is? Who in here doesn't know their gift yet? Okay, let me tell you what you do. Go home today. Don't talk to nobody. Sit down and have one conversation with yourself. What is the thing that I do the absolute best with the least amount of effort? This ain't going to take you long. You old enough, you grown. Write it down. I don't care if it's networking. I don't care if it's babysitting. I don't care if it's doing color. I don't care if it's painting. Whatever it is, it's what you do. Sing it. Whatever you do the best, write it down. That's your gift. That's it. You ain't got to go asking a bunch of people. They've been telling you your whole life. You know, you ever have people call you with their problems? They always call you with your problems because you gifted at it. But you didn't know how to identify it. If you identify your gift. Now, let me ask you this question. This thing that you're gifted at, if you did it for somebody, do you think somebody would pay you $10 for your gift? Just $10. Could you babysit for $10? Could you cut somebody's hair for $10? Could you cut their grass for $10? Could you make them a chicken dinner for $10? Could you do something for $10? Everybody, don't you have something somebody would give you $10 for? Okay, now, once you have something that somebody's willing to pay you $10 for, this is how this works. It's called the multiples of 10. See, you don't have to figure out how to be a millionaire. You just got to figure out the thing that makes you $10. So now here we go. You do it and you make $10. Soon as they pay you the 10, go do it 10 more times. Whatever it was. Watch some more kids 10 more times. Get another 10. You got $100. When you get $100, whatever you did to make that $100, listen to me, do it 10 more times. You ain't got to get tricky with it. Just do it 10 more times. You'd have made $1,000. Whatever you did to make the $1,000, don't get smart. Stay stupid now. Do it 10 more times. You have now made $10,000. Hold up. Now we finna grow a little bit, but guess what you got to do to grow? You just got to do some more. Whatever you made $10,000 doing, I need you to do it 10 more times. What you tripping for? If you do it 10 more times, you got $100,000. Now, you might have to hire some people to make this happen. You got to figure that part out. But all you got to do is do what you did for $10. Once you make $100,000, if you just do it 10 more times.
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit, and it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Robin, can you hear me now? I have my mic off. I went on a rant, and I didn't realize I had my, and I was looking at the board. Okay. Well, I guess I got to do it all over again. Okay, Robin, I'm going to open up your, okay. You there? Hello? Okay. People can hear me now. All right, so, yeah, Robin, all right, great, let me. Thanks for calling me. I went on a rant and didn't realize I had my mic closed. I didn't realize my mic wasn't open until I went to my tablet. Let me put this out here. Robin, with the 10x10 rule, we can attack it a couple of ways. Today's the 29th, so no later than tomorrow, you know, I have to launch one, and that's the tent. So I already got the tent. I already got the backyard. I need to post pictures and whatnot.
We didn't even hear the audio that you played.
Oh, woo. Okay, let me. Right,
yeah, it, the
back.
Whole thing went. It just went dead. So
that's weird.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
so
let me
repeat
play that audio
again. And then repeat your rant because we missed
right.
it all.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Wait a minute. Let me see. What was the last thing you heard? Claude Anderson or Steve Harvey. All right, wait a minute. Okay, let's do it again.
Listen to me. Rich people think differently. So what I'm going to put in your head today is a rich people concept so you can get to understand it. The only difference between successful people and not is just how they think. Rich people think different. Quit letting people tell you got to get qualified in another program. You don't need another program to be successful. You need to change the way you think. So here's the deal. The problem with becoming a millionaire is that when you decide that you want to be a millionaire, you immediately start thinking, how can I become a millionaire? Well, that thought don't just pop into your head, so you get frustrated and you don't become a millionaire. And you start creating stuff like, well, I guess this wasn't the Lord's will. Or as soon as I think of how I'm going to make a million. You can't think of how to make $1 million. Stop. Do you know if you knew how to make $1 million? What's today? Tuesday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? But suppose I told you how you can become a millionaire with what you have. Because here's the deal. All of you have everything it takes to become rich. You just don't believe it. Now, if you can develop this theory that I'm about to share with you, I have the way for you to be rich. This is it. First of all of you have a gift. God gave it to you when he created you. God never created a single soul without giving them a gift. That's the God that created you. He's a very smart God. Hear the cold thing. When he made you, he put the gift inside of you. He didn't hide it under the ocean. It ain't on the mountain nowhere. It ain't under no rocks. You ain't got to go drilling. God put what you needed inside of you at birth. All of you have a gift. But you have got to do your gift, the thing God gave you at birth to do. It is the thing that you do the absolute best with the least amount of effort. That's your gift. Anything else you doing, you wasting your time. Do you hear me? You wasting your time. If when the alarm clock goes off in the morning and it makes you sick every morning that alarm go off, it's because you ain't doing your gift. you're going against what God created you to be. Do most of you know what your gift is? Who in here doesn't know their gift yet? Okay, let me tell you what you do. Go home today. Don't talk to nobody. Sit down and have one conversation with yourself. What is the thing that I do the absolute best with the least amount of effort? This ain't going to take you long. You old enough, you grown. Write it down. I don't care if it's networking. I don't care if it's babysitting. I don't care if it's doing color. I don't care if it's painting. Whatever it is, it's what you do. Sing it. Whatever you do the best, write it down. That's your gift. That's it. You ain't got to go asking a bunch of people. They've been telling you your whole life. You know, you ever have people call you with their problems? They always call you with your problems because you gifted at it. But you didn't know how to identify it. If you identify your gift. Now, let me ask you this question. This thing that you're gifted at, if you did it for somebody, do you think somebody would pay you $10 for your gift? Just $10. Could you babysit for $10? Could you cut somebody's hair for $10? Could you cut their grass for $10? Could you make them a chicken dinner for $10? Could you do something for $10? Everybody, don't you have something somebody would give you $10 for? Okay, now, once you have something that somebody's willing to pay you $10 for, this is how this works. It's called the multiples of 10. See, you don't have to figure out how to be a millionaire. You just got to figure out the thing that makes you $10. So now here we go. You do it and you make $10. Soon as they pay you the 10, go do it 10 more times. Whatever it was. Watch some more kids. 10 more times. Get another 10. You got $100. When you get $100, whatever you did to make that $100, listen to me, do it 10 more times. You ain't got to get tricky with it. Just do it 10 more times. You'd have made $1,000. Whatever you did to make the $1,000, don't get smart. Stay stupid now. Do it 10 more times. You have now made $10,000. Hold up. Now we finna grow a little bit, but guess what you got to do to grow? You just got to do some more. Whatever you made $10,000 doing, I need you to do it 10 more times. What you tripping for? If you do it 10 more times, you got $100,000. Now, you might have to hire some people to make this happen. You got to figure that part out. But all you got to do is do what you did for $10. Once you make $100,000, uh-oh, if you just do it 10 more times.
Okay, that was Steve Harvey, the 10, I don't even know if they're finished, but anyway, the 10 by 10 rule, which, that's what we're at. Now, there's a book called the 10 by 10 rule, but I like the way Steve Harvey summarizes it. So tomorrow, either today, it'll probably be today. Today's the 29th, tomorrow's the last day of September, so we want to launch at least one housing project. In our case, it'll be a tent in the backyard as the first, let's say, I call my projects geese, golden geese, or geese that lay the golden eggs. So we'll do one of those. We'll launch one, hopefully before midnight tonight. And then if we had to tweak anything, marketing-wise, then we got tomorrow, the last day, I'm going to do that. So anyway, September 2021, that we're starting off with one. Now, next month, October, we want to multiply that. And the goal is the net at least $100. Okay. we've got a $100 or $200 idea minimum. So the next month, October, we want to do that 10 times. Now, we have a four-acre tract of land where we can put three structures on it. We can put three tents, we can put three cabins, or we can do a combination of the two. We're going to have to work that out. But in total, but that's only three. So we'll have to figure out how to, it would be nice if we can put 10 on that. Actually, we could put 10 tents there. Theoretically, we could put 10 tents there. But I'm playing it safe. I'm looking at, okay, we can definitely put three built structures there. We can put three Bavaco buildings on that site. And that's with foundations, but we don't want to deal with permanent foundations. We want mobile housing units. So we know we can put three there on the 4 acres, but then, you know, we have to see how we're going to place the others. Now, we could do this a couple of ways. Because if we look at yesterday, we mentioned we can do, you know, let's say one the first month, 10 the second month, and then maintain 10 housing units on, it could be on 10 separate properties, or it could be on, four to five separate properties. But we have to take each step at a time to realize that. Or we can do it by the acre. In other words, okay, we do 1 acre this month. Of course, we just got a quarter acre to start, but that's plenty. And then we can do 10 acres the next month. And then we can do 100 acres the next month. 100 acres is kind of daunting. Right now it is. So, but we're starting off with one, using the 10 by 10 rule. Because, like I say, we can keep it simple. One between today and tomorrow. Next month, 10. And we can probably do 10 with no more than three parcels of property. We can definitely do 10. Actually, it's, 3, 6, 9. Yeah, no, actually 4 pieces. Well, we had to find out how this goes. So, in any event, we'll be doing, I figured, 10 a month, because let's say if we did 10, because each property, like say the 4 acres, is one parcel of land, but we're going to be putting three housing structures on it. In any event, Robin, one thing that we didn't have discussed yet is, now because we just discussed the hygiene situation, the toilet situation.
Yes.
We can even put up a portable bathroom with a shower, but and a solar shower at that. But the one thing that we haven't discussed, because October is here in a couple of days, and it will be, it's turning cooler now. I'm in Florida, and the last two days has been cooler here at night. Right now, I mean, I got the doors open and everything, but it's the perfect temperature. You know, you don't even need air conditioning. So things will be getting cooler now. So I went online this morning, particularly Amazon, well, YouTube University first. Some of these tents will need a heater, some of these tents and or cabins, because we'll be doing a combination of the two. They'll need heaters, and along with those heaters, they're going to need carbon monoxide, I guess, alarms.
Yeah, detectors.
Yeah, detectors. That's it. That's the word. Carbon monoxide detectors. So I hadn't thought about that. So we'll probably need to do some research on what's the best type of heater for a tent, and definitely a cover. And then we got to think about ventilation, and then we have to think about the carbon monoxide detector, and people had to be educated on how to use those gadgets as well as ventilate them. And that could be a possible profit center too. A carbon monoxide, I mean, in other words, here's your heating unit. And the heating unit comes with probably the, I mean, because you can heat with propane, but propane is gas. So if you're not, it's not properly ventilated, things can go left. So that we hadn't, I didn't think about that until very early this morning. Anyway, your thoughts?
I'm just excited to get started.
Okay. Well, let's see. I've got the backyard here. Now, I got to take pictures. The grass needs to be cut. And I don't have a lawnmower, but I'm going to have to get a – but I don't want to wait 2 days before he can come over and get to cut the grass. I've got the tent. You know what? I think I got some old pictures of that backyard. I'll use the old pictures. So I'll use the old pictures of the backyard, which where the grass has been cut, and I got the tent. But it's a brand new tent in a nice carrying case. But I don't want to unpack it, so I'll find it. I'll find a picture of that. I'll use the pictures of the one I have, and then I'll get the same exact model of it all set up, and then use that in my display.
Yeah.
And
so sometimes you can go to the website of the whoever made the tent. And sometimes
right.
they have photos and video products
and that's,
as well.
You know what? That's what I will do. That's what I will do. And use that. And I think I'll test drive the ad in just two online platforms to start, maybe three. And Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, and I'll think of one other. Or maybe our Facebook page. And I'll have all that up today. I'll have all that up today. So that gives us a 1 day cushion.
And something else too, you have It's My House podcast is real estate too. Okay? So you could do the 10 by 10, 10 for 10 with advertising. Okay? You could do.
Break that down with advertising.
Advertising, you could go to companies, businesses, other talk shows, other podcasts, other stations, and say, hey, if you'd like to advertise on It's My House, you can get a commercial, a banner ad on our website, radio stations.
I would
and then you could get those ads really, really cheap. You can even say, give me $10 and we'll run your ad. 10 of those is $100.
What I would do that, I can try that idea after I've got a few communities online first.
Well, you don't need to wait for that. That's what I'm telling you. You always get And you can start with what you have, because what you have, you are on a network with 14 other radio stations and 19 TV stations. And then there's 5 websites and the talk shows between us.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that is real estate that you can be taking in money for and earn, generating revenue, passive revenue, income, running ads on your network, on your channel. And I've been telling you this for a long time. You're missing a lot of money. And really,
see, the reason why I'm hesitant on that is, in particular when I was doing, terrestrial stuff, I've only used a sponsor one time for one show.
Right. Sponsor is
and the rest
completely
of it,
separate
and I've laid
animal.
Out,
a sponsor
and
is a
I've
completely
laid out,
separate
like,
animal than an advertiser.
Yeah. I've typically handled all of my, I mean, and I've laid out as much as $2,000 a week.
Mm-hmm.
But I usually recovered that money myself. Because I really didn't need advertisers. Then when you take on advertisers, you know, if they don't get the results that they wanted, the calls, the number of calls and all this other stuff. And I've even done stuff. I did volunteer work. I don't like advertisers.
Yeah, okay, I understand that. But see, our network is not, is different than other networks. You understand? Mm-hmm. Other networks, they do the advertising, right? And they're really strict on the ratings and blah, blah, blah,
mm-hmm.
right? Right? But at I Am Streaming, we are not ratings-based, okay? And the whole thing, we're creating the channels to put into syndication and distribution for the purpose of monetizing. And then you receive 80% of the revenue that comes in from that, from those ads. And so it's not like the other networks where they're just getting the opportunity. It's really simple. The advertisers are just going to be advertised across the platform. And it's not ratings-based. We don't have to deliver any numbers or anything like that other than the traffic that the sites are getting. So, you know, I've simplified everything. I created the monetization system. And I'm telling you, you're missing a lot of passive money. A lot of passive money.
Yeah, but I'd like to say advertisers, I don't like dealing with them. That's why I've done everything. So if I can't afford it, I don't do it.
Right, but that's – what's the purpose? Most people do radio to make money, L.A., and in radio,
and I made it.
In broadcasting, well, even just on a pure business sense, okay,
mm-hmm.
forget the reason why, but most of the revenue, the majority of the revenue that comes in on broadcasting and talk shows and whatever is from the ads,
mm-hmm.
even over sponsors. And sponsors is a completely different animal than an advertiser. And then over here, we make it really simple that they're just getting the opportunity to advertise, and they don't get to dictate and blah, 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 because we're not ratings-based, if you will. So,
would also depend mm-hmm. on if I were to do it, I would also be selective of what kind of advertisers I even want
mm-hmm.
to be associated with.
Yes, which you would have that free reign because it's your channel. You own the station. And that's another reason, I mean, that's another difference between I Am Streaming Network and other networks. We work to accommodate you. okay? So it's like, you know, you had the experience that you had with other networks, get that out of your head, because that's not what we're doing over here at I Am Streaming.
Well, like I said from the beginning, the way I've done it is, like I say, I don't, I've always run things where I don't need the advertisers to do what I need to do.
Well, I'm going to beg to differ, because I'm sitting here listening to you, and I hear you say, I need to come up with the money for this. I got to pay this bill. I got to do that. So I beg to differ, just saying.
Well, if an advertiser is interested, they can reach me. But if you know, like I say, if they're, you know, if their message, and then their message has got a job with what I'm doing.
Yeah. And again, that's what I'm saying. You have the creative control. Where if you're on another network, they're going to run what they're going to slam whatever ads that they want to on your content over
here. The only way that
you have a say so.
All right. The only way I would be interested in advertisers is once I get to the point of, let's say I've got 100 bare minimum. Of 100 different communities that I've initiated on the ground that have their little economies going, you know, like a Tap, Oklahoma, Pembroke, Illinois, Eatonville, Florida, Jasper, Florida. You know, I've got, you know, that's 100 of them, because then I can say, well, here's what we got in these markets. You know, hear the demographics and all this other stuff.
Right.
And then even then, you know, does their message jive with what I want? Do I want them to be associated with what we do? An example would be Don Cornelius with Soul Train. The primary sponsor when he was getting started with Soul Train, this is after they got to L.A., because Soul Train originally started in Chicago. The company that bankrolled Soul Train was Johnson Products, and there are two Johnson. There's Johnson Products, that's the Ebony and Jet Johnson. That's John Harold Johnson. That wasn't him. It was George, and I think George still might be living. George Johnson and I think his wife, Joan, I think she passed away. But that Johnson Products, the makers of the Afro Sheen, the blowout kit, and all that. But that matched the Soul Train
were
wearing Afros and they were buying pomades and different, you know, that matched. And then later on, a sponsor that he had was, and for a long time, and that was a national syndicated show.
And then later on,
he was able to get the Army.
Yeah, and again, sponsorship is a separate, completely, totally different animal than advertising. I'm talking advertising.
All right, well, let's switch it to advertising. One of the stations that I used to be on in Orlando, this guy, matter of fact, if I can get him on one day, his name is Steve January. And when he told me, he broke it down, I looked at, matter of fact, even Kathy Hughes and her husband, Dewey Hughes, when it comes to advertising, on, in this case, black radio stations, regardless of the format, the majority of their advertisers were local businesses. The national advertisers didn't touch them. And then the local advertisers that basically supported the radio stations, these particular radio stations were the funeral home, and there's only so many funeral homes in a particular market. You know, Bubba's
right.
Rib Shack,
so,
somebody
right.
like that.
So the difference between I Am Streaming and that is that was local. We are worldwide in 200 countries, and we're in mainstream media. We're not just beaming up in the air in one city.
Okay, well, let's attack it from that angle, going back to Steve January and Kathy Hughes. Okay, the reason why a lot of the McDonald's, the Coca-Colas, the Burger Kings, the Kentucky Fried Chickens didn't advertise on local radio is because they had a national or national audience or whatever. So
yeah.
What I'm saying is, and then that's a whole nother animal when you get into people that have that kind of advertising budget that
that's who we're trying that's what we want to reach.
Well,
yeah.
No, the people I'm trying to reach are people on the ground. All right, for instance,
yeah.
When I put this tent up in this backyard, when I put up the three structures in Jasper, the people that
right.
I'm looking for, the people in that
okay.
whatever that town is, 40 miles away from Manford, Texas, I'm
right.
looking for locals. I'm looking for locals
okay.
who will live
all
in
right,
those
so
places.
Now listen. The advertising is other companies advertising on your network, not you promoting your show. You promoting your show would be promoting in the one of trying to
reach let me ask you
whomever,
this.
Which is against separate from
name
advertising.
Name advertisers who are going out, like with the 4 Acres, which that's coming up next month. Jasper,
mm-hmm.
Florida. And where this property actually is really not in Jasper.
Yeah.
That's the P.O. box, but it's physically not in Jasper.
Yeah.
But that's the way, but that's the zip code that you have, whatever.
So,
who's going to, the population is so small in this, well, what I call it, Earth Wealth Energy Village. The population is so small that the Census Bureau can't even give a number on it. So you saw the pictures, and it's got a video
right.
up on Patreon.
And
so
it's
near a Walmart. It's near I-10. It's near I-75. But what advertisers are going to advertise in that spot?
All right, you have to remember that you are on a network that you are reaching beyond your local area. You're broadcasting
that.
Directly in mainstream media worldwide, just alongside HBO, Netflix, just like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're reaching the same markets that they are. Amazon, Spotify, iHeart, all of these are mainstream, directly in mainstream. So,
right.
So your reach automatically is beyond your local area. And your attraction
right.
is that your show is 8 years old. It's national. And it's already been syndicated for years on this network.
Right.
See,
well,
you're sitting there running
name an advertiser
your
or two.
You don't get. Okay, so what I would do is I would look out. Okay, I would seek an advertiser. I would look for a company or a business or a service or a community something that's serving the homeless. Or they have a homeless thing. Watch this. Cities have advertising budgets, okay? So I
mm-hmm.
might venture to go to the city of whatever, say the city of Seattle, and say, hey, you have a homeless problem. There's camps, blah, they need to be cleared out, RVs, blah, blah, people living on the streets, right? I have a solution, okay? Okay? So we've got a parcel of land where we're building, we're teaching people how to build, blah, 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 blah. Would you like to advertise? And so with dialogue, that's how. And then the who, there's the yellow pages and the long list. I mean, it would be grassroots efforts, if you will. But you would seek out the like-minded or the businesses and stuff that are conducive to your projects. Exactly. Uh-huh. And what I would do is I would probably get a student or an intern or somebody and get them familiar with what we're doing, and then I would set them loose with a yellow page. And then they can develop. See, you have to develop relationships with people. And you, what you're doing is bringing resolution and a solution. You're answering problems, so you're not going to have any issues at all, if that makes sense. Uh-huh. Yep. And so your reach can be locally and beyond, and then the who is you could reach anyone from local mama and pops to big corporations. All you have to do is ask. That's the same thing any other advertising corporation does, no matter how big or small they are. They send them a proposal. Hey, we've got blah, 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 here's our demographics and here's our rates. And it's just as simple as that. Okay?
Well, you know, for me, I wouldn't want to have anything to do with any government.
And so another network is not going to sit down with you where you say, well, I don't want to deal with that. Another network is not going to accommodate you. I am streaming, Will. Why? Because we need you streaming. We need your content out there reaching the people. Number one, you're teaching people how to build to live. And that's very, very important. They're not getting that in school anymore.
Now, are you talking about I am streaming as an advertiser or some other source of advertising?
I am streaming is the network.
Okay, yeah, I am streaming is the network. Okay.
That It's My House is on, that when people advertise, it would not only be advertising on just your show and segment, but across the whole network of 19 TV stations.
Now, could you name mm-hmm. an advertiser or two that hypothetically might fit the advertiser, you know? They might want to buy advertising as you're talking about it.
Houses for Habitat.
Humanity, I mean, you're talking about Humanity, Habitat for
yes.
Humanity?
Yes.
I don't like them either.
Well, I know, but I mean, for example, Lowe's, a hardware company, Ace, a lumber company. Okay? You know,
I would be open to a mom and pop operation, hardware, lumber.
A mom and pop. See, the sky is the limit. And watch this. The mom and pops are an untapped market. Let me tell you the reason why. Because those same networks that won't broadcast, advertise on local networks, right? Their budget is too high for the local people to advertise. They'll be like, yeah, you can advertise on our station, our network, but you got to pay us $50,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, yeah, no. So that leaves an untapped market that you can go in and grab all of that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All of that is passive money. That's just sitting there. They don't want it. That's fine. I don't care if you can only give me $1 a month. You understand? We'll accommodate you. Okay?
Mm.
And then again, the value, for that advertiser is they're not being advertised and heard just on your show, but they'll be across the whole network of 19 TV stations and 15 radio stations to date, and 5 websites and 5 podcasts. So all of those would insert commercials and advertising and banner ads on the websites like that. Okay?
Mm.
Yep. And so with you're already established and you're already out there, you've got consistent downloads, you've got traffic, you broadcast, all of those they're solid. They make you a solid. And you would be giving people an opportunity to advertise where they couldn't. Okay? So now you can go in and you can grab local people and you can go national as well. Easily, whatever you'd like to do. So my thing, though, is just passive income that's just sitting there that you could be having. And you know what? I understand about not liking things, and you don't have to like things, and you don't have to do anything that you don't like, but if it's an opportunity for something, then get somebody or pay somebody to do the things that you don't like to do. But
I'm looking at for instance, I was about to say this earlier. I used to organize solar tours. I'll probably get for a national magazine, Solar Today magazine. And part of that was we gave away, and matter of fact, Solar Today magazine, they do the first weekend of October. At least they used to do it. I think they still do, but I haven't dealt anything with them for the last almost 10 years at least. But first weekend in October, they would do a solar tour of homes nationwide. And for people who had a solar business, you know, selling solar panels, inverters, something related to, you know, solar thermal stuff, you know, stuff that was related to solar energy. You know, they would get free advertising in local markets. A website, this is all at my expense. But it didn't cost much to put up a website because I know how to do websites. So I put up a website, and then all the local, you know, any local vendor that was selling solar whatever can do it. Now, the market that I was dealing with at the time was Pittsburgh. So, you know, I put up the website, put up advertising, and then a lot of people nationwide would, you know, participate with the solar tour homes. So there was a lot of traffic, a lot of foot traffic this weekend, every first of week of October. Anyway, this one joker that had a solar business, he was fucking bitching it. Oh, damn. Well, anyway, I already said it. I mean, look, man, it's free, you know, but he had to come out of his – now, although we didn't charge him a penny, that was the policy across the whole thing nationwide. For us to put him up on a website, you know, I said, give me all your material, give me all your pictures. I took all that, didn't charge him a penny, all right? And there was a lot of foot traffic through all these – because these are individual homes. People who typically go solar, whatever, you know, they basically you can knock on their door and they'll talk to you. They even might give you a tour of the home. That's just the way solar people are. So we had the foot traffic, but he had to hire somebody. He had a showroom. He had a brick and mortar showroom, and we put all that information on the website. And he was not a happy camper because he felt not enough people came to his brick and mortar showroom, and he had to pay somebody, you know, to be there. He looked at it as a loss. He was whining and complaining about that, and he was complaining to me. But I put your shit up on the internet for free, and there was foot traffic at all these other individual homes. So, and that's dealing with free. So I don't even want to deal with anybody who's paying 2 cents. That's why, I don't need all the money on the table. I'm happy with what I corral in. That's my whole thing about advertisers. If I can't swing it, I don't do it. Now, that's just me. In any event, but some people, because advertising, now you've got the personality to make it work, because you're good at customer service. You're very good at person, customer service, and all that. And you're very, very, very patient in educating people on how that works.
So with that person and other people, their expectations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of what they got. Okay, they got a contract. They had a contract with you, right? And you don't guarantee them
the results.
What I'm saying is you're providing for them something, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
So they oh, you threw me off. I got thrown off, sorry.
And you know what? They also had now the sponsor of a whole event, which had them listed. I was just clogging the thing for Pittsburgh.
They were
also listed in the national magazine, Solar Today magazine.
Right. So people.
So they just weren't happy all the way around.
So watch this. People's expectations, right? So
right.
You go and you get advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Advertising. There's no people's expectations, right? You say, okay, we're going to advertise your stuff here, here, and here. That's not
mm-hmm.
saying that we're guaranteeing that people are going to come into your store or even click on this, blah, blah, blah. Right?
I agree.
So people's expectations, that ain't got nothing to do with you, okay? And then again,
I understand that.
Wait a minute.
Okay.
And then again, you are on a network. So
mm-hmm.
the network would be dealing with that on a network level, not you. Because you're sitting there on the podcast, you're originating your show, and so
mm-hmm.
I think it's you don't have like the whole picture. So you and we are, even though it's only one person basically, but we are a network. We have the same capabilities and technologies and hardware that all of the mainstream networks do. Yeah,
right.
We're rolling with the
big
dogs.
Well, once again,
okay?
you've got the personality and the patience to deal with that because I'm. Here's how I look at advertising, because I have and still do. I used to spend some heavy weekly money. I used to spend over $2,000 a week on advertising. But and none of the sales executives gave me any pointers or direction. I had to figure out, when you're dropping $2,000 a week. You figure out how to make things work. I'll give you a good example. I spent $5,000 on a production plus another $2,000 for the airtime to promote a workshop in Northern Virginia, right across the 14th Street Bridge near the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And, you know, some people, because I figure I would get a demographically a mixed crowd, and some people would walk by the room. Matter of fact, I got to go tribal on this one. Okay. You know, some white folks would peek in the room and double back and peek in. So I done spent over $7,000. Because I have to pay for the conference room too. So someone told me, and I had to come up with another $2,000 for the following week. Okay.
Yep.
That's just on advertising. So something told me, and once again, I couldn't go back to the TV or the radio station, okay, and say, look, this didn't work. And some people do that. All right. What I did was I said, you know what, let me switch locations. I went from one person in a conference room, okay,
yep.
And it happened to be a black person. And I switched the next week, to another location. I switched to the Howard Inn in Washington,
yep.
D.C., the conference
yep.
room was packed.
Yep. So
and I was able to recover my money.
Right. So see.
Now
so
hold. I'm saying
people,
that to say this. I took the time. I realized with advertising and marketing, because advertising is part of marketing. Okay. I was willing to do the trial and error. Okay, what works? What doesn't work? What works? What doesn't?
Yep.
I'm willing to do that. But a lot of advertisers are not willing to do the trial and error thing.
Well,
what works and doesn't work.
It takes work. What works and what doesn't work. So the operative word is work. Okay? So people
you
don't want to put
that.
In the work.
Right.
Right.
You and me know that, but a lot of advertisers, particularly advertisers, they don't know that.
I just want to say this: people will have they'll say, "Okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to pay for a service, whether it's advertising, promotion, marketing, groceries, whatever." Okay, now in their mind's eye, they have their expectations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which may or probably is not in line with what is realistically being offered or sold, okay?
Right?
Right?
Yeah.
So a lot of people, when they go and they say, well, okay, I'm going to go and I'm getting like this, right? And then if it doesn't work or if it's not working out, right, especially if you paid money into it, right? It would behoove you to accommodate yourself to try to make some adjustments. Now, like you said, let me switch places, and you switch locations and look what happened. Now, just from your changing your thoughts and changing your mind and your willingness to change your physical location, you changed up versus, oh, that didn't work. And then you go back to the people that you paid for, and they don't have no responsibility for people showing up at your event, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
They promoted.
They don't.
And they're marketing. They've done their part. Their stuff is up there.
Right.
So you have to connect the people to that marketing. So, you know, that's how that goes. But and I understand all that. That's why the system that I created, I simplified everything. all you have to do is just broadcast and do what you do, okay? And just agree to allow commercials to be inserted on your show as they fit with your approval. And then
well,
you'll receive 80%
of
the revenue.
If they fit, I have no problem with that.
Right.
But you know what? I don't even want any money from it. That's just the way I'm
right. So this is what I am streaming. The network of I am streaming does. Okay, we distribute music and videos, film, full feature film, documentaries, music videos, and then we also syndicate. Content, music distribution, syndication with monetization. That's the operative thing, with monetization. And the whole thing is so eventually the end result will be 300 stations, 100 each, 100 radio, 100 TV, 100 podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
All of those are 324/7 opportunities for advertising, and that's the business model. That's where all the
now,
money's going to come
what,
in.
All right, the piggyback so on what you just saying. A conversation
yes,
that me and you had about maybe about 3 weeks ago, no more than 4 weeks ago at the most.
Yes.
When we were online and we were looking at the statistic of how many neighborhoods exist in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you hook up something with that, you know, I think that'll be an easy sell. If it's approached from the neighborhood level. I mean, there's many ways, you know more about it than I do, but I'm just saying where my mind's at. If, you know, if there's certain, because that's a market. Because the radio stations and the TV stations, and I'm just for sake of example during this conversation, if you look at Radio 1 or Urban 1, whatever they call it now, with Kathy Hughes, her network, or any of those stations that run that format, they basically run a very broad network, but they don't get into the neighborhoods. And that's where a lot... Radio,
right.
Particularly AM radio, has lost
right.
its edge because they're not in, and we've been using this several times, they're not into the community. That's where I'm at.
I have an answer and a remedy for that, too. The MABEN, the Mobile Advanced Broadcasting in Your Neighborhood.
Where we go mobile and
take that into the communities on a mobile platform. We're into the communities where they are underserved, exactly, or where they've been abandoned.
Yeah,
exactly.
I would call because there's a lot of most neighborhoods, even high income neighborhoods. Or basically, in my opinion, virtually media deserts. So a lot of the places where, you know, I've been buying land at, you've been doing research for a week or so, you know those places are straight up media deserts. Because they don't have any media in those places at all. But
right.
Now, your Maven concept and what we do here and what you do with Vibe, with all your networks, those fit into those offline markets because you're supplying a service that is they're media deserts. You know, Eatonville, Florida, which is 45 minutes away from me, is 6 miles outside of Orlando. But Eatonville, Florida, which is the oldest surviving black township in the United States. Any media. They don't have a radio station. They don't have a TV station. I don't even know if they have a newspaper.
Right. Right.
I don't
okay.
even know if they have a newsletter.
So you take yourself in there on the MABIN, the Mobile Advanced Broadcasting in Your Neighborhood, and the vehicle can be a really simple. It could be a van. It could be a car if that's all you had, or even a bicycle or a moped because it's all portable, right? You have your portable Wi-Fi. It's connected to the network, the TV and the radio and the podcast through the app on your cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have that on the tripod. You go out on the road into the neighborhood, and you can run your broadcast, your talk show, your TV, whatever. You can film a church service. You could film a music video. You could stream a birthday party. I mean, or a community event, a town hall meeting. Mobile Advanced Broadcasting in Your Neighborhood. Named after my father, Murray J. Maben. Mobile Advanced Broadcasting in Your Neighborhood.
Well,
it's named for me.
Okay, it's
sorry.
Well, advertising is an interesting topic because, like I say, it all depends on what your
Okay, so watch this. Watch this. 10 for 10.
Yeah.
Okay, and foot traffic. So you got your land, right? And you got your tiny home. You got your tent that you're putting up, right? Along the sides of it, you can also put up vendor tables, right? And instead of charging the usual $125, charge them $10. $10.
No.
Right.
All right. Now,
let me finish.
All right.
Okay. The vendor's on the ground, right? You've got the tiny homes there, right? They're building the tents, right? You've got your whole project going on, right? So you've got vendors there, and these vendors probably have businesses and whatnot. Now you can go to them and say, hey, how would you like to advertise your blah, blah, blah here, your table here, blah, 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 and your business on the radio station, on the show, blah, blah, booty to blah. Then you got your foot traffic, you got your blah, 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 and you could 10 for 10, right? Make it $10. You could do the advertising for $10. We got a special. You can get your spot for $10 and your air slot for $10. Okay?
Okay.
10 times 10 is 100.
All right. Beasley, if you want to chime in on this, press 1.
Sorry.
Okay, I'm thinking about, okay, when you say vendors, okay, so the visual that I have when you use the word vendors, okay, and this is just one example just of a visual that popped in my head, I'm thinking about farmer's market or flea market.
Something like
okay.
that. And it doesn't necessarily have to be that, but just basically you section off slots and sections, right? And you compartmentalize the acres, and you allot so much to the tents and so much to the vendors, and whether it's a flea market or whatever, but basically they're just slots. And you sell them for 10 for 10.
Okay, all right,
those,
let me ask you this. Okay.
And then all of those, they'll probably be business owners, so they can all get another $10 and advertise on the radio
Now,
show.
Let me ask you this now.
10 for 10.
That's why I said ask Beasley if you wanted to chime in on this. Now, the farmers markets that I've been to, farmers markets and flea markets, where you do have quite a number of vendors. As a matter of fact, there used to be, I don't know if they still have it going around the country, the Black Show Expo. I don't know if that still exists, but it used to be going around the country all the time. what, once again, I'm not, this is not my lane. I'm just going by my observation as a consumer. Not more of an observer than a consumer. When you got vendors in a farmer's market type environment or farmer's market or flea market environment, you've got, in order for a vendor to cough up their vendor table fee, no matter what it might be, $5, $10, $25, $100, whatever it might be, you've got to demonstrate a bunch of foot traffic. I mean, a lot of foot traffic. So,
okay.
The Jasper location and the Presidio County locations, just as an example, they don't have that kind of foot traffic yet. So now what are you doing to generate that foot traffic where hundreds, if not thousands of people come through there?
So watch,
and a majority of those people don't even buy anything.
Watch this. Any flea market that gets started there, right, they have the same problem, zero foot traffic and zero history, zero documentation, right? And
mm-hmm.
so they do the thing to get the people there by marketing several weeks in advance with flyers, word of mouth, radio advertisements, whatever. Like that.
Or if you're starting off, allowing your vendors from the beginning, just give them a free table to start off until you build up a credible amount of foot traffic. I'm just thinking about a volunteer time I did where they attempted to set up this is the time I met Van Jones. But if I meet him again, he probably would not remember me because that's a whole other story in itself. But they gave away some vendor tables for a green event, and nobody—I can't recall if any vendors showed up for that, and it was free.
Because you have to market. You have to market before. When people don't show up, it's because they don't know.
Well, let me paint the picture here. They had a lot of people that showed up, but they weren't vendors. The people that did show up, and mind you, this was supposed to be, first thing, this was Van Jones. He was just about to launch his book. I think he's written more than one book, but his first book called The Green Collar Economy. For those who are not familiar with the book, Van Jones wrote a book called The Green Collar Economy, and it was about, the book's about how black people can get in on the green energy revolution and, you know, get trained, you know, to install solar panels, retrofit buildings, and how Pookie can get a job. He actually uses that word in the book too, Pookie. All right. So now, I was the, and Marion Barry showed up for this one. But he showed up before Van Jones got there, took a photo op, said he was going to come back, but didn't come back. All right. I was the only black person. And there were white folks that were basically nonprofit that were sponsoring this event. And I was the only black person. I was the only green black person, and green means, you know, you're into solar energy and all this stuff. I was the only black person among that group of people. Everybody else that was running it was white. Out of all the black people that showed up, I was the only one who knew who Van Jones was. I spotted him. Shook his hand. As soon as I shook that dude's hand, white people that knew Van Jones, I never saw him for the rest of the day. Now, how did they get these other black people there? Now, these white people were not vendors. The black people that showed up, how they got them out there in Southeast D.C. was free hot dogs. And these were the people that needed to read Van Jones's book.
Yeah.
Because they were the ones that had $900 or $1,000 a month heating bills. These are the people that needed to read about Pookie in the green collar economy because they needed jobs. But they came out for the hot dogs. That's it. And not a vendor, and the vendors that would have come to this event, that should have come to the event, were people that were solar panel installers. Now, let me give you an update on that neighborhood, because that's not far from Berry Farms in D.C., anybody familiar with Southeast Washington, D.C. That neighborhood has now been gentrified. So some of those people that came by for the hot dogs don't live there no more. They've been shipped out to someplace in West Virginia, other parts unknown. And the black entrepreneurs that could have got in on that, they didn't. I was the only one there. That was it. That's when I ran across Pleasant Steffens. He was the first black person I ran across that knew about solar or renewable energy and all that type of stuff. So the advertisement is tricky, but you know more about it than I do. So now I get your vision when we're on the neighborhood level. People who want to get into certain neighborhoods because, or you want to attract people to your particular neighborhood. Oh, wait a minute. Robin dropped off. All right. So, okay, we got still a lot of time left. And then some businesses that you can set up in neighborhoods and, you know, like a convenience store, and you really don't need to, I mean, Beasley, correct me if I'm wrong. But if you set up a 7-Eleven or a convenience store in certain neighborhoods, you know, that, you know, they might sell a newspaper, candy, cigarettes, lotion, you need a gallon of milk, loaf of bread, you want to buy a single cigarette, buy a single stamp, buy some ramen noodles, whatever. In a convenience store. We all know what convenience stores sell. You know, a lot of those places probably would not need to advertise. You know, it's in the neighborhood. The store in and of itself is the marketing tool. So, you know, why would they need to advertise on any radio, TV, or streaming station? But I don't own one of those. So I don't know. Somebody that's in that, they might know. In any event, now that's because, like I said, when it comes to advertising, you know, what I do is I go on and see if something works. Now, Blog Talk works for me, but I had to figure it out. But I'm going on 8 years, and I'm still figuring out. But it's sustainable. So now, if I was dropping over 100 a week on Blog Talk at the beginning, I would have stayed on for, you know, I would have given it. Actually, you know what? Because I used to, like I said, I used to spend on the low end $150 for hours worth of advertising on certain radio stations. And some places that was $400 for an hour's worth of advertising. Some places, $2,000 for 30 minutes. Okay. So when you're dropping that, and the only reason why I was able to sustain that is because I was able to put in anywhere from 150 to, as an example I gave earlier in this podcast, it's one particular week I spent $2,000 just on advertising. I'm not even talking about the support stuff I had to spend money on up front. And I had to figure out real quick what changes could, I couldn't have gone back to the advertising platform. They're not in that business in teaching you how to work things out. I had to figure out real quick before I spent another $2,000+ on what do I need to do, what do I need to tweak in order to get people to come in so I can recover my $2,000. Because that's only, I had to recycle the $2,000 each and every week. That's how I was able to build up some traction and build up a community. For me, it was a distressful fix at first, but it was an easy fix. Switch locations. I didn't change the message at all. I didn't change the time at all. I didn't change the topic at all. All I did was change the physical location, and I stuck with that. Now here, online platform, like something like YouTube. YouTube is basically free. You know, you got to pay a teeny bit, just not a lot, but a teeny bit for Blog Talk. But for YouTube, it's free. So when you're on a free platform, you know, you can play around with it a whole lot. Okay, here on Blog Talk, it's the cost are very low, so you can play around on that. But there's some people that have tried Blog Talk, and it hasn't worked for them, and they've gone to YouTube, which is free, and that's worked for them. So you got to find out what market and your marketing strategy works for you. Let me see. I'm trying to get things straight on this board. But like I say, I'm guessing some businesses, like for instance, a lot of Chinese food restaurants, the little neighborhood ones, you know, their marketing might be they're in a shopping center that is that's anchored to a big grocery store, okay, or in addition to that, they have somebody pass out flyers in a particular neighborhood, and that works for them, you know. So in any event, we'll get back to this and that. This 10x10, but you guys who've got businesses out there, past or present, I guess this has turned to marketing. So what's your take on advertising, which is just a part of marketing in business?
And now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? to teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They're going to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show me your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children, because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see the trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses that could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their.
All right. Well, we started off talking about the 10x10 rule, but then we got into advertising and marketing. And, you know, that's the topic we haven't covered on here before, marketing. Marketing. Because, you know, different people particularly if you know your market, where do you find your particular people? Where are you going to find the customers that will buy your product and or service? And social media is an excellent tool if you know how to use it. I'm still learning. In any event, so anything you guys want to talk about, particularly if you share your experience on marketing or advertising or something of that nature, interesting stuff. All right, 314 area code, your mic is open.
Hey, LA, what's going on?
It's the temperature is nearly perfect where I'm at. Really not too humid at all because I don't like humidity. You don't need any air conditioning on. Matter of fact, you don't even need the fan on.
Oh. What happened to Robin? She was there for a while.
She just dropped. She's back. Robin, press 1 if you want to come in. She dropped off and then she came back in. But she's here. Well, hold on.
You still in D.C.?
Oh,
you in Florida?
Her mic is open. All right, wait a minute.
You know,
her mic is open.
Are you familiar
Hello?
With? Oh, Robin, how you doing?
I'm good.
The
how
Amtrak
you?
Traveler. Oh, I'm fine.
Oh yeah, I'm going Thanksgiving on Amtrak to Salem, Oregon.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
That sounds like a nice trip.
And you know the Empire Builder just derailed in Joplin, Missouri.
Yeah, I heard Joplin, Missouri. I know that place. Matter of fact, it's along the route of Old 66, if I'm not mistaken. And Nucor just built a new steel fabrication plant there, thanks to Donald Trump. At least they had it on schedule. But, L.A., if you're going to put up some tents, you don't need no heat. You just got sleeping bags, right?
You know what I was thinking, because not, you know, this is such a litigious society. I'm thinking some people might not even know how to camp.
Well, they may not, but you don't need no heat inside the tent.
All
the
tents
I've been
in,
put a
I've never needed. Right. Every tent I've been in, I've never had a heater. Like you said, it's, you know, you get in the sleeping bag and you're good to go.
Absolutely. Then the next morning you get up and restoke your fire, start brewing your coffee.
Right, but like I say, some people, maybe I watch too many YouTube videos, some people... things happen to them, and you find out they just didn't know. Things we take for granted, they just didn't know.
You know, I was listening to you, Umar Johnson. I came in nearly Fuller. They be making some false statements on those little skits that they have. Ain't nobody taking out nothing from those schools. Who is this day? If people wanted to teach their children vocational skills, do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I like about, well, while I played the Nellie Fuller thing, now, I agree with you. The whole idea was people used to build these shotgun shacks in the weekend. Now, the white supremacy part, I don't agree with. They took it out.
No, that's what they throw out there, that mess.
Right. So I look at the current, the nugget in it.
Everybody builds a shelter for themselves. Ain't nothing peculiar about blacks building it. Blacks don't want to build no houses. They don't have to. My grandson ain't gonna don't have time to be building houses in the profession that he's in. And the people on the lower end, Pookie and Ray Ray, ain't gonna build no house. So who's gonna build the houses? I mean, yes, use some common sense on that. That stuff Umar is talking about what they ain't. Well, he's right about that, but Nigerians ain't going to teach your kids to take power from theirs. I ain't going to teach your kids to take power from mine, especially if we're coming from two different political perspectives. It don't make sense. Think about it. If you're teaching somebody to do something, to take power from you, that's going to empower them, then they turn around supporting political aspiration that goes against your interest. Is that wise?
Well, people are tribal. Around the globe, people are tribal, and, you know, it's just
Blacks
like you
ain't
said,
traveling around the globe, not Black Americans. Now, people, yes, but the places I've been, I don't see no Black Americans. Of course, I ain't everywhere. Mm-hmm. I tell you someplace else you don't see them. You don't see them in the expo shows, like, for instance, the International Poultry and Processing Expo that occurs in Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
In January. It attracts people from all over the world. Now, I don't know how it's done since the pandemic, but you have companies from all over the world come and display their products and their machinery. You don't see no Black Americans.
Well, yeah,
you see a lot of Black people. You see a lot of Africans, but not your cousins.
When it comes to RV manufacturers, you don't see. I haven't run across or seen any Blacks involved in that industry at all. In the manufacturing.
Now I know of a Black couple. I don't know if they married, but they do have an RV park.
Mm-hmm. But that's a park. What I'm talking about, the people that actually manufacture campers and the RVs. I haven't seen. There might be a manufacturer because that's I'm into the manufacturing. So I haven't run across not one yet.
Yeah, well, I think that market is saturated with pretty well, just like your yachts.
Mm-hmm.
It's a company down in Florida, West Palm Beach. I think West Palm Beach is a majority Black community.
Yeah, West Palm Beach does have quite a few Black folks.
Right. And I know that company, I can't think of the name of it, it's one of the world's largest, was involved with a charter school that was preparing young people for that particular industry, the shipping industry, and the city council, which is the majority of Black council of the school. And there's another one out in Oakland. That guy's name is Ron Graves. He started Oakland Youth First, where he does both maritime and aviation. I don't know if he's still doing it or not. But now you're talking about solar installers. The largest Black solar installer I know in this country is Reginald Parker. I don't know if he's still in business or not.
What city is he out of?
I think he's out of North Carolina, but I'm not sure. He's done Silicon Valley solar. And that was in Los Gatos. He done one in Gettysburg, North Carolina, called Rep One. It's a solar farm. And it's operated by, I think he operates, but I'm not sure. I think a Black conglomerate operates it. And I think they sell electricity to Dominion Electric Company. Then I think he done another one up in Massachusetts called Deerfield.
Okay.
Deerfield, Massachusetts, where he done one. He sold electricity to them. Then he done one in I think it should be done now, D.C. Solar JV in Washington, D.C. I think that was like close to a 2-megawatt solar rooftop project. And I think he might have done something. He's trying to do something with a company, Integrated Mining, I think, over in Ghana.
Hey, I'm looking at with Dr. Reginald Parker.
Yeah. I don't know what he's doing now. He may still be in business. I don't know. I don't too much care for solar myself. I don't mind solar for electricity. I don't care for solar for heating water to aid in producing steam for steam turbines for generating electricity. Steam turbines that made by GE or Siemens out of Germany. I don't know if Siemens is still doing it or not. I know GE is still doing it, though.
Yeah, Siemens is a big company. Very big.
Yeah. But I don't care for solar myself because I think that attracting solar energy from the sun, that's creating a circuit. Well, you're going to make the sun expend all this energy fast and everybody dies then.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen.
No, it may not. But the thing is that it does exist because solar rays are hitting the earth, but it's not drawing. It's coming on its own fruition. But when you start drawing from a source, you're starting to deplete that source. It's going to deplete on its own, but you can speed it up.
Never heard that argument of it before.
And photons, photonic energy, when it's being drawn on, it's a circuit. It's just like a battery. When you connect a circuit to a battery, that battery is starting to discharge unless it's recharged.
Right.
But you can't recharge the sun. The sun is burning helium fuel. At some point in time, it's going to burn out. It's going to expand first. Then when it expands, it's going to start to encompass planets like Mercury, Mars, then Earth. Earth will be encompassed and burnt up by the sun. Everything that we have on here, all of Robin's collections, and all them tiny homes and big buildings and everything else, going to go bye-bye. All remnants of the memories is going to be all gone.
How many billions of people on the planet would we have to have by then to make something like that happen?
Well, it ain't how many billions. Even if you just put one, you're starting to help it to drain. My theory. I think the fuel that this planet produces is being produced for a reason.
Well, I agree with you there.
Oil is not fossil fuel. It's anaerobic. It's created right there at the mantle of the earth. And it continues until some point in time. It may get short, but it always replenishes itself. That's one thing about the earth. It's a cycle. It's live. It knows what it takes to keep itself going. And when people come up with these scare tactics, they're usually for some profitable or benefit to them. They're trying to move in on the market. Somebody that's got the market already got a lock on it.
I'm looking at the Earth is 4.5 billion years old, and the sun is 4.6 billion years old.
Well, I think recent tabulations have increased that by tenfold. I think the Earth is about 40 billion. And there's suns out there in the universe that's much, much larger than our sun.
Oh, yeah, look like much younger.
Against
I mean,
water,
not younger, but older, yeah. And larger.
Yeah, make it look like a jelly bean against alongside a watermelon. Then you got black holes. Black holes destroy sun.
Right, your energy goes in those, but it can't come out.
Yeah, the Earth may go up in there too. Won't see Robin no more.
We don't know what's inside of a black hole.
You don't see me. Leave me out of it.
But have anybody ever done a cost analysis on going to solar and the benefits? I think it's still expensive as hell. I wouldn't buy nothing.
I know the cost has come down. But you know what I tell people, though? I say before you even consider going solar, you need to make some adjustments on your lifestyle first, which basically comes down to becoming frugal. If you're not frugal, you need to become frugal. Because if you keep this, if you leave the windows up and don't turn off the light switch or just have wasteful habits, solar really is not going to do you any good.
Well, actually,
you really need to adopt a lifestyle first.
Yeah. Well, I love sleeping with the windows up. Let fresh air in. That's better than that recycled air conditioner. Have you ever done that at night? Open the window.
Yeah, I've done it.
When I designed my home, I designed it in order to create a cross draft, a cross breeze, a breeze. So you open up one window on one side, open up the other, and it creates a breeze. That draw air from the cool side of the house. And as the hot side of the house, the southern exposure gives up heat. That convection is going to draw cool air.
I visited a guy's house. I hope he's still living. He lived in western Pennsylvania. He lived in a passive solar house. He built himself. And it's facing south, and it's got a panel of glass on the front of his house. And
he probably got water capillaries running in it in order to heat water.
Well, I know he's got a little stove in there, but and it gets cold in western Pennsylvania, but he heats his house with passive solar energy. And it's also built underground, part of the house. The back
of the
house.
It's built underground, the back of the house, it's facing a hill, built into a hill?
Exactly, because, you know, the first time I went to visit him, man, I passed by that dude's house anywhere from 4 to 6 times. Because I could, you know,
didn't
I saw a
it.
Post office box, but I didn't see a house. So I went back into town and asked somebody who was doing something out there that day. It was a little teeny town. And, she asked me who I was looking for. I said, Ron. And she told me how. So I went back right where I came from, but I drove real slow, and then I saw a driveway and a hill. And as I drove on that little driveway, and then I saw the hill, and then on a certain portion of the hill was a door sticking out of a hill. And that was his place.
Well,
but then,
yes.
You know, had I walked around the hill, I would have saw the front of the house, and it was all glass. Facing south.
Well, see, that maintains a certain temperature all day long. Now they got these other methods of thermal where they put these tubes into the depth of the ground and circulate water through them. mm-hmm. in order to draw off the coolness. I don't like that neither. I'm going to tell you why.
What are you talking about, solar thermal? Geothermal.
Geothermal. I really don't like that either because you're disrupting or disturbing the pattern of how the earth operates. See, that cool would naturally dissipate, but if you help it to dissipate faster than what it normally do, then you're disrupting things. Now, what that guy done that you're talking about, he built his house into the hill where the temperature
right.
is pretty much the same all year long.
Mm-hmm.
So if he wanted to heat the house, the amount of energy to raise it from 35 degrees to 70 degrees is a lot less than if you were trying to raise it from 0 to 70 degrees.
Okay.
And
now,
then he wouldn't have to cool it at all.
Okay. In Iceland, some of the homes or buildings, really, I don't think it's countrywide, but they use geothermal to heat the buildings.
Now, I tell you something that was good is them heat pumps. Because a heat pump is not really disturbing anything. What it does, it takes the heat out of the air. No matter how cold the air is, there's heat at present. And the heat pump separates the two. And in the wintertime, it sends that hot air back into your home that it takes out of the cold. Cold air. That was a cool thing.
Well, I guess a lot of people still have heat pumps, though.
Yeah, I imagine they do.
I imagine they do, yeah.
But one of the most efficient homes is the monolithic domes.
Now, what was his name?
The spray dome. Polyurethane spray domes.
Buckminster Fuller. He's talking
about
that.
Yeah, you make them sandwiches. You see this, and the heat goes up, and it's collected and circulated back down. The same thing you see with Mars in Arabic countries. Their Mars there has those domes. Now, I imagine they use them for collection of heat at the top. Because it's hot as heck over in them countries.
Mm-hmm.
But I like monolithic domes. They're earthquake-proof, storm-proof. Unlike your regular construction.
Now, when
There's
you say earthquake-proof, because, you know, they can have some violent earthquakes where, you know, the road cracks open. What do you know about sinkholes? What causes those?
A sinkhole is when the bottom falls out.
I know what that is. But I haven't read up on them. But, you know, Baltimore had a
sinkhole. It may be caused by underground streams, maybe underground river. It's washing out the dirt.
That's a frightening thought.
The river give off moisture. The moisture try to permeate through the soil to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, it loosens the soil. Next thing you know, you don't went down about 100 feet.
That's scary.
Then, like Robin, she thinks there's worlds underneath the ground with people living. So you fall in that sinkhole, you'll be able to find out if any people down there, like Alice in Wonderland.
I was watching some documentary good 2-3 days ago on, Undersea World. I guess the lower you go down there, the temperature is not cold, but hot. Or very warm, at least. Not maybe boiling hot, but the ocean is
deep. Well, you got
a
combination. You got a combination of both of them. It depends on where you are. You know, animals in Africa, you can take a monkey and give him some salt. You're out in the desert. He'll eat that salt, then it makes him thirsty as hell. Then he'll run off, and if you follow him, he'll usually lead you to water. And it may be an underground stream going into a cavern. That's the way they
do it. Well, nature knows.
Yeah, but that'd be interesting. Where are you going to put the tents at?
Where are
your tent village?
Well, we got, that's just as a start. One of the things we've been talking about is I'm thinking, you know what, don't rent them a tent. You know, just sell them the tent. Because when you're dealing with rentals.
What, a pup tent?
The person doesn't own it. They can rip it. They can spill stuff, not clean up behind themselves. If you sell it to them, it's theirs. They take it with them when they go.
What, a pup tent?
No, I was thinking something, you know, that can hold about five or six people.
Oh, man.
But regardless of the
tent.
You
don't need no heat in there. You get all them people in there, they get the snoring and farting, and they produce heat.
the body heat when you got that many. But I'm looking at. I don't want to do it as a permanent thing, but then some people, they got budgets. But, yeah, selling the tent, it's theirs, and when they leave, you take the tent with you. Because when you get into tent maintenance and all that, I don't want to get involved with that.
Yeah, but I can't see no Americans wanting to stay in no damn tent.
Well, they got quite a few tent rentals on Airbnb, believe it or not.
Yeah, but them ain't black folks.
And they even have campsites that, it's a niche. It's a niche.
Good luck.
You know, just like with cabins, you know, I'm all right with sleeping in the cabin, but that's me. Some people want something in a city, urban environment. That, you know, that's
you
the
know
way
what you should
it.
Get
you
involved
the
in,
company conveniences. What's that?
There's organizations out there that have do them survival excursions.
Mm-hmm.
Where they start off, number of people, and they give them a map to get from one place to the other, and along the way they got cabins. That have food in it, so when you get there, when you trek there, you got a cabin to stay in with food. You got to build a fire and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So join up with one of them and see how you like it.
Well, give me a key word. What do these organizations go by? What kind of organizations are they?
Well, it's just basic survival.
Oh, survival. All right.
Of course, they're kind of expensive because they give you a radio. If you think you can't make it, you do that signal,
oh,
the helicopter
okay.
come get you.
Wilderness Survival Training School.
Yeah.
All right, that's one in Alaska.
They had a black man on there. They had a black man in one from Detroit, I think. Shit, he only lasts one day. He was calling them up on his radio, come get me. But, yeah, try that out and see how you like it.
Interesting. Some people need to learn how to survive an urban environment.
Yeah.
They got a 24-hour experience. Now they got them for women. They got them from children and families and adults. They got a 24-hour experience. All right, for this one in Alaska, they got a 24-hour experience. Group adventure following historic Swift River to Quiban. I didn't know that. All right. This is very okay. I'm going to watch some videos on
that.
It.
Yeah, do that. take Robin with you. Do that. They got one for
Robin,
about 2 weeks.
She can survive anywhere, I think.
24 hours is not going to do you no justice because you ain't going to do nothing but stay in one spot.
Right.
Take the one for about 2 weeks where you got to trek about 100 miles.
You know, that sounds like people that do the Appalachian Trail then.
Yeah, they got people that do that. They got that. They might even still follow the old Route 66 trail.
Wilderness.
And you can go into other countries and get involved in some of those things if you want to.
That sounds like fun, too. I mean, I can get into this sort of thing, like wilderness survival. All right, well.
Get to all your supplies, your backpack, your compass. And all those things.
Won't see too many black people involved. Won't see too many black Americans involved with that. I don't think. But I'll see them.
Hey, they probably.
All right. Well,
if they come upon an Eskimo town, you probably be center attraction. They'd probably be coming up around you, wanting to touch you and take pictures with you.
Well, Robin, you still there? Her light's still on. All right. Well, it's 12:47.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, Robin, you lived in Alaska for a bit. Did you see many black folks up there other than where you know, your situation? I know the. Okay.
No.
Now, let me ask you this, Robin. You got some urban survival skills. How do you think they would fare out in the Alaska wilderness?
How I would fare?
Right, for 2 weeks in the Alaskan wilderness.
Oh,
right in the middle of the state.
I lived a year, 365 days in that environment. So you adapt. You know, you get the outer gear. You adjust. You adapt. So I would do just fine.
Okay.
Who were you with?
2 weeks. I was in the military.
Well, Robin, come on. That's
we're talking about away the military.
We were at
that's
a remote.
Cheating.
All right, Robin, we're talking about take away the military, the Alaskan wilderness.
So watch this. If before they sent me there, I had training, survival training, extreme cold weather training, and hot weather, first aid, you know, all of that. So
where'd you get
I've
your protein from? Where'd you get your protein from?
Well, when we went out, we had it provided by with the sea rats and everything. But as I'm explaining to you, is that we had training, a survival training and stuff like that, that taught us how to get vegetation, determine what's safe, you know, and purify the water and stuff like that. So I've had training, I would fare okay. I would make it out there because I would rely on my training.
Yeah.
And stuff, you know.
Would you eat any worms or did you have to eat earthworms, I guess?
Well, we were only in a training environment, so we didn't have to do anything. We had the training.
Well, they got some programs where people can try that survival out for 2 weeks. You go from one destination to another, who I think is about 150 miles, and you walk. You get across rivers.
I ran
into
a bunch of people in Vermont that were doing the Appalachian Trail, and that's all walking there.
Right. People can get an
idea.
There's many
people that do that stuff, though. There's a lot of people that you meet that do that type of stuff. You know, they're global, a lot of them. You know, That's how I found, Robin, that's how I found that land in Texas. I was in Vermont, and I was talking to this young guy. He was in his 20s, millennial. They were doing the Appalachian Trail, and he told me about a town in the next county, in Brewster County. And
if you're
going to
do that,
something in Presidio.
You got to get yourself in shape.
Yep, you got to be
take
in shape.
People,
there's no doubt.
Take people on tours of Egypt, and we tell them before the time to leave, 2 weeks out, maybe three, you start going to Planet Fitness, then going to the track where you can run a mile or more to get yourself in shape. Because if you don't, you ain't going to make it. You're going to be left by the wayside.
Yeah, I can imagine.
All right, well, I'm going to be looking for you and Robin on one of these programs, on one of these shows, and see how you handle that.